Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m.
New York and Cairo, this is Democracy Now!
I always say the situation requires one to stand by our people's side and not run away from it. Gaza is our homeland, our mother, our beloved, and everything to us.
As Israel arrests Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, director of Kamal Adwan Hospital, the last major functioning hospital in northern Gaza, the World Health Organization has called for a ceasefire and an end to Israel's attacks on Gaza's medical infrastructure. We'll get an update in Cairo from Dr. Hassan Abu Sita, who worked in Gaza with Doctors Without Borders. Then Gaza's health ministry confirms more than 45,500 Palestinians have been killed since October 7, 2023. We'll speak with Israeli-American scholar Omer Bartov, professor of Holocaust and Genocide Studies at Brown University, who's just back from Israel and says Israel is carrying out a combination of, quote, genocidal actions, ethnic cleansing, and the annexation of the Gaza Strip. And former President Jimmy Carter has died at the age of 100. As we begin our look at his life and legacy, we'll hear Carter in his own words in a Democracy Now! Interview about his book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid.
Americans don't want to know, and many Israelis don't want to know what is going on inside Palestine. It's a terrible human rights persecution that is far transcends what any outsider would imagine. And there are powerful political forces in America that prevents any objective analysis of the problem in the Holy Land.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh. In Gaza, a one-month-old baby named Ali Al-Batran has died from hypothermia in Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. The baby's death from bitter cold temperatures faced by Palestinians displaced by more than a year of Israeli attacks came just one day after the infant's twin brother, Juma Al-Batran, also succumbed to hypothermia. They were the fifth and sixth Palestinian babies to die of exposure this week as Israeli forces continue their withering assault. At least 27 Palestinians were killed and 149 wounded in the last 24-hour reporting period, bringing the official death toll from Israel's nearly 16-month-long assault to more than 45,500, though that's likely a vast undercount. On Sunday, an Israeli attack on the upper floor of Al-Wafa Hospital in Gaza City killed at least seven people and wounded several others. The nearby Ahli Hospital was also damaged from artillery fire. Meanwhile, CNN reports Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, the director of the Kamal Adwan Hospital, is being held at Sede Taiman, an infamous Israeli military base in the Negev Desert that doubles as a prison where Palestinians have been tortured. On Friday, Dr. Safia was arrested as Israeli troops stormed Kamal Adwan, northern Gaza's last major functioning hospital, setting the facility on fire and forcing staff and patients outside at gunpoint. This is Faris Al-Faneh, a patient who survived the ordeal.
At around 4 a.m., the army came into Kamal Adwan Hospital and asked all the medical staff, the patients, and the people accompanying them to go out into the courtyard. And then they sorted everyone, the medical teams in one group, the patients in another. Then they got ambulances to get us and sent us through the main gate. We were taken for interrogation at around 3 p.m. They stripped us naked and left us there until sunset, with no one to aid us. We were left in the dust, and then one soldier would come around every once in a while and would curse at us and spit on us. It was very ugly.
We'll have the latest on Gaza after headlines. In the occupied West Bank, 22-year-old Palestinian journalist Shaza Al-Sabah was fatally shot in the head late Saturday near her home in Jenin. Her family said she was walking with her mother in a well-lit neighborhood and carrying young children when she was shot by a sniper with the Palestinian security forces. There was reportedly no fighting nearby at the time of her death. The Palestinian Authority denied the claim and instead blamed Israeli forces for the killing. Sabah had been active in documenting the Palestinian Authority's crackdown on armed groups fighting the Israeli occupation. The leader of the armed groups who toppled longtime Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad says it could take as long as 4 years for Syria to hold elections. Ahmad al-Shara made the comments in an interview with the Saudi Al-Arabiya network, saying it will take time to organize a new census and up to 3 years to draft a new constitution. Al-Shara also said his paramilitary group, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, would soon be dissolved. Elsewhere, civil defense groups say 11 people were killed, most of them civilians, after an Israeli airstrike triggered a massive blast at a weapons depot near the Syrian capital, Damascus. This follows dozens of Israeli airstrikes on Syria's military infrastructure in recent weeks. Thousands of Israelis rallied in Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, Haifa, and other cities on Saturday night, demanding a ceasefire deal to release the remaining hostages held in Gaza and calling on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to step down. Families accuse Netanyahu of sabotaging a hostage release deal so that he could remain in power. The protest came a day before Netanyahu underwent successful surgery to have his prostate removed. Critics noted Netanyahu received anesthesia during his surgery, something that's frequently inaccessible to Palestinians. An International Criminal Court arrest warrant for Netanyahu for crimes against humanity cites, among other things, Israel's blockade of anesthetics and anesthesia machines from entering Gaza. South Korea has begun a second day of national mourning after a Boeing 737-800 airliner operated by Jeju Air skidded off the end of a runway at Wuhan International Airport and crashed into a concrete wall before bursting into flames, killing all but two of the 181 people on board. It was the worst aviation disaster involving a South Korean airline in nearly three decades. Investigators are looking into whether a bird strike caused the flight from Bangkok to crash and why the pilots did not have the plane's wing flaps or landing gear deployed when attempting an emergency landing. The leader of Azerbaijan has called on Russian President Vladimir Putin to apologize and admit guilt for the fate of Azerbaijan Airlines Flight 8243, which crashed in Kazakhstan on Christmas Day after a failed attempt to fly from Baku to the Russian city of Grozny. The crash killed 38 of 67 people on board. President Ilham Aliyev said Sunday he believed the plane was shot down unintentionally by Russian air defenses.
The facts indicate that the Azerbaijani civilian plane was damaged from the outside over Russian territory near the city of Grozny and almost lost control. We also know that the use of electronic warfare put our plane out of control. The Russian side must apologize to Azerbaijan. Secondly, it must acknowledge its guilt. Thirdly, those responsible must be punished, brought to criminal responsibility, and compensation must be paid to the Azerbaijani state, to the injured passengers and crew members.
On Saturday, Russian President Vladimir Putin apologized to Azerbaijan's leaders for what he called a, quote, tragic incident, but stopped short of accepting responsibility for the crash. Georgia's outgoing president, Salome Zurabishvili, refused to step down Sunday as former soccer star and Kremlin-backed conservative Mikhail Kavivlashvili took the oath of office. Zurabishvili said she would leave the presidential palace, but insisted her successor is an illegitimate leader. Four opposition parties refused to participate in Sunday's inaugural ceremony in Georgia's parliament in Tbilisi after denouncing October's elections as rigged. On Sunday, there were scuffles between police and protesters who gathered near parliament.
Our legitimate government is trying to appoint an illegitimate person who does not have any background in politics, diplomatics, economics, who does not know how to rule a country other than maybe score a goal once or twice in a match. He was a footballer that does not have any type of background or education. While we had a great president who had an education, great education, studied in France, Salome Zurabishvili, she has done so much for this country, and even right now she's trying to get our voices heard in the West, talking to so many diplomats and trying to make take this country in the right direction.
Former President Jimmy Carter died Sunday at his home in Plains, Georgia. He was 100 years old. The 39th president served a single tumultuous term in the White House from 1977 to 1981. He's remembered as a man of deeply held faith who helped negotiate a landmark peace deal between Israel and Egypt that holds to this day. Carter was also a committed Cold Warrior who began funneling arms to the Afghan Mujahideen to fight the Soviet Union in 1979. He continued to support right-wing authoritarian governments in Latin America and beyond. His austerity politics also hastened the Democratic Party's neoliberal turn, further cemented by his defeat to Ronald Reagan in 1980. In retirement, Carter devoted himself to causes including election integrity and building homes for low-income people. He stirred controversy in 2006 with his book Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid, in which he compared Israel's treatment of Palestinians to South Africa's former racist government. This is Jimmy Carter speaking to Democracy Now! In 2009.
Palestinians can't even ride on the same roads that the Israelis have created or built in Palestinian territory. The Israelis never see a Palestinian, except the Israeli soldiers. The Palestinians never see an Israeli, except at a distance, except the Israeli soldiers. So within Palestinian territory, they're absolutely and totally separated, much worse than they were in South Africa, by the way. And the other thing is, the other definition of apartheid is one side dominates the other, and the Israelis completely dominate the life of the Palestinian people.
That's former President Jimmy Carter speaking to Democracy Now! In 2007. Later in the broadcast, we'll air extended clips of our past interviews with President Jimmy Carter. At least four people are dead across Texas, Mississippi, and North Carolina after a strong storm system produced dozens of rare late December tornadoes over the weekend. The Houston region was especially hard hit, with one person killed and four injured after several tornadoes struck southeastern Texas. Meanwhile, a new report from Climate Central and World Weather Attribution finds human-powered climate change led to an average of 41 extra days of extreme heat in 2024. Small island and developing states suffered the largest increase in extreme temperatures. 2024 is on track to become the hottest year in human history, surpassing the previous high set in 2023. And a warning to our listeners and viewers, this next headline contains graphic descriptions and images of state violence. Newly released body camera video shows guards at an upstate New York prison beating a handcuffed prisoner to death. 43-year-old Robert Brooks was pronounced dead on the 10th of December, a day after guards at the Marcy Correctional Facility in Utica repeatedly punched and kicked him in the face, chest, and groin. Four of the officers involved were wearing body cameras but did not activate them. At least three of the officers involved were previously accused of assault. Brooks was black. All of the officers who took turns beating him appear to be white. Ahead of the video's release, New York Governor Kathy Hochul fired 14 state prison staffers and ordered an investigation into Brooks' killing. New York Attorney General Letitia James, who has also opened an investigation, said it was a difficult decision to release the body cam footage.
I do not take lightly the release of this video, especially in the middle of the holiday season. But as Attorney General, I release these videos because I have a responsibility and duty to provide the Brooks family, their loved ones, and all New Yorkers with transparency and accountability. My deepest condolences go out to Mr. Brooks's family.
The New York Civil Liberties Union said in a statement, quote, "It shouldn't take a cold-blooded killing captured on film to be a wake-up call to our leaders that the culture of officer brutality in New York prisons must be stopped," unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York, joined by Amy Goodman in Cairo. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Nermeen, and hello to all our listeners and viewers around the country, here in Egypt, and around the world.
We begin today's show in Gaza, where a sixth baby has died from severe cold as the death toll tops 45,500, and Israel's assault on medical infrastructure continues in the besieged territory. On Sunday, an Israeli attack on the upper floor of Al-Wafa Hospital in Gaza City killed at least seven people and wounded several others. On Friday, Israeli troops stormed Kamal Adwan Hospital, northern Gaza's last major functioning hospital. The director of Kamal Adwan, Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, was arrested and his whereabouts remain unknown. Many staff and patients were reportedly forced to go outside and strip in winter weather. This is nurse Walid Al-Boudi describing Dr. Hussam Abu Safia's arrest.
Dr. Hussam Abu Safia was arrested from Al-Fakura School after he had stayed with us and refused to leave. Even though they told him to and that he was free to go, he told them that he won't leave his medical staff. He took all of us and wanted to get out at night. But they yelled at him and arrested him, a man of great humanity. We appeal to the entire world, all of the world, all the human rights organizations to stand by Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, the great man, the man who planted within us and within our hearts patience. So we can persevere in our steadfast north, I swear, we wouldn't have left but by force. We cried blood on the doors of Kamal Adwan Hospital when we were forced out by the occupation army.
A person who was with Dr. Hussam Abu Safia shared testimony that, quote, the Israeli forces whipped Dr. Hussam using an electrical wire found in the street after forcing him and others from the medical staff to remove their clothes, unquote. This is Dr. Hussam Abu Safia in one of his final interviews before being detained, produced by Suturis.
I always say the situation requires one to stand by our people's side and not run away from it. Gaza is our homeland, our mother, our beloved, and everything to us. Gaza deserves all of this steadfastness and deserves all of the sacrifices. It is not just about Gaza, but we deserve to be a people that deserves freedom, just like every other people on earth. I think the occupation wants us to get out and for us to ask them to get us out so they can publicly say that the healthcare system is the one asking to leave, and that it wasn't them who asked us to, but we are aware of that. But we will not leave, God willing, from this place, as I said, for as long as there are humanitarian services to be provided to our people in the northern Gaza Strip.
That was Dr. Hussam Abu Safia in one of his last interviews before Israeli forces arrested him Friday in a raid on Kamal Adwan Hospital, along with at least 240 others in a raid which left the hospital non-operational. Israel's military alleged that Hamas militants were using Kamal Adwan Hospital. The World Health Organization is calling on Israel to end its attacks on Gaza hospitals. Earlier today, the World Health Organization's chief, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, said, quote, people in Gaza need access to health care. Humanitarians need access to provide health aid. Ceasefire. Last week, World Health Organization spokesperson Dr. Margaret Harris was asked on Channel 4 News whether there is any evidence of the Israeli claim that the hospital is a Hamas stronghold.
So whenever we send a mission, we go and we look at the health situation. Now, I've not had at any point our healthcare teams come back and say that they've got any concerns beyond the healthcare. But I should say that what we do is look at what the health situation is and what needs to be done. But all we've ever seen going on in that hospital is healthcare.
Well, for more, we go to Cairo, Egypt.
Nermeen, thanks so much. I'm here with a man who knew Dr. Abu Safia well and is in constant contact with people on the ground in Gaza, particularly the medical professionals. Dr. Hassan Abu Sita is with us here, British-Palestinian reconstructive surgeon. He worked last year in Gaza for over a month with MSF, Medecins Sans Frontières, that's Doctors Without Borders, in two hospitals. hospitals. He worked at Al-Shifa, the main hospital in Gaza, as well as Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital. Welcome to Democracy Now! You've been in touch with family of Dr. Abu Safia. If you can talk about where he is right now, believed to have been arrested by the Israeli military, and then the crisis just right now on the ground with the closing of Kamal Adwan and more.
So, unfortunately, the family is afraid that he has been moved to the infamous the Tinman torture camp, an internment camp, where before him, Dr. Adnan al-Bursh was tortured and tortured to death. Dr. Iyad al-Rantisi was tortured to death, where there is documented evidence of not just Israeli guards taking part in torture, but even Israeli doctors taking part in the torture of Palestinians. And so that is the fear that not just the family has, but all of us have. And what we've seen in this process, in this destruction, systematic destruction of the health system, with the total destruction of all of the hospitals in the north. So not just Kamal Adwan, before that the Indonesian hospital and Al-Awda hospital. And immediately after, the targeting of Al-Wafa hospital, and then the targeting again of Al-Ahli Baptist hospital, which was the first hospital the Israelis targeted on the 17th of October. The targeting of Al-Wafa hospital was intended to kill medical students from Gaza's Islamic University who were sitting in exam in that hospital. And luckily for them, the Israelis got the wrong floor. And then the targeting of Al-Ahli Hospital, which is now the last hospital functioning in that whole arbitrarily created northern part of Gaza, is a sign that the Israelis will now move towards the Ahli Hospital for destruction. I just want to highlight, there is research that is about to be published that shows that the chances of being killed as a nurse or a doctor in Gaza during this genocidal war is 3.5 times that of the general population. So it's been obvious from the beginning that Israel has been wiping out a whole generation of health professionals in Gaza as a way of increasing the genocidal death toll, but also of permanently making Gaza uninhabitable.
Well, Dr. Hassan Abu Sitta, you, of course, as we mentioned, as Amy mentioned in the introduction, you've worked in two Gaza hospitals. You've just talked a little about what's recently, the recent Israeli attacks on medical infrastructure in Gaza. But if you could explain, just to give a sense of what's happened overall since October 7th, 2023, if you could say the scale of the destruction of medical infrastructure, as well as the systematic attacks on medical personnel, as you said, this new research that's coming out that shows that they're 3 to 4 times more likely to be killed than the general population. So if you could just say, begin from October 2023 to now.
So what happened on October the 12th is that the Israeli army started to call by phone medical directors of all of the hospital, telling them that unless they evacuated the hospitals, the blood of the patients would be on their hands. And I remember that day I was with Dr. Ahmed Mhanna from Al-Awda Hospital, who's still been arrested now for over a year, an anesthetist and a medical director, and he received a phone call from the Israeli army to tell him to evacuate Al-Awda Hospital. Of course, we realized that point that the destruction of the health system was going to be a prerequisite for the kind of ethnic cleansing that the Israelis wanted in Gaza. I was in Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital on the day of the 17th of October when the Israelis bombed that hospital, killing over 480 patients. And then we had the whole narrative about Shifa Hospital, the siege of Shifa Hospital, the destruction of 3 pediatric hospitals in the north, and then the first attack on Shifa Hospital. And then after that, 36 hospitals in Gaza have now been reduced to the three partially working hospitals in the south, and only a remnant of Al-Ahli Hospital in the north. We have had over 1,000 health workers, doctors, nurses, health professionals killed, over 400 imprisoned. And then the destruction of the health infrastructure, the destruction of water and sewage, the use of water as a tool of collective punishment in order to create the public health catastrophe that exists in Gaza in terms of infectious diseases, and the intentional famine. And so not at the moment, we have in Gaza what the doctors are referring to as the triad of death: hypothermia because of the winter, wounding because of the injuries, and malnutrition. And with the three, what happens is that people die of at higher temperatures, people die of lesser injuries, because the coexistence of these three conditions means that the body is depleted of any physiological reserve. And so that's why we're watching over 7 kids in the last week die of hypothermia, an adult nurse die of hypothermia. Not because the temperatures are sub-zero, their temperatures are just hovering above zero, but because they're so malnourished and they're injured, that, and a lot of them have infectious diseases, and so they're dying at the same time. Israel has created a genocidal machine that takes Palestinian lives beyond the injury, beyond the bombs, beyond the shrapnel. And so people are dying of infectious diseases, people are dying because of the health system is collapsed, and so their chronic diseases become medical emergencies, and people are dying from the famine and the malnutrition.
So in light of that, Dr. Hassan Abusita, if you could comment on the fact that so many people now, an increasing number of people, are questioning this death toll of 45,500 over that number who've been killed in Gaza since, or who have died in Gaza since October 2023. People are saying that is a vast undercount. From what you're saying, that seems almost certain. If you could comment as a medical professional, you know, what do you think it might be a more accurate figure?
So 45,000 are people whose bodies were taken to a Ministry of Health hospital, and they were taken by people who witnessed or who recognized them, and a death certificate was issued. This 45,000 excludes the tens of thousands who are still under the rubble, more so in the north, where the emergency services were targeted by the Israelis and so are now completely unable to function. And so we see pictures of dogs eating bodies of those killed in the streets. And so not only people under the rubble, people who've been killed and not reported, or their bodies have not been retrieved, when you drop 2,000-pound bombs, there's very little of the human body that is left. And so there are people who literally pulverized by these bombs. Then you have those whose chronic illnesses, once untreated, became deadly. So the kidney dialysis patients, the heart disease patients, the diabetics who were no longer able to get treatment. It doesn't take into account the women who are dying from maternal care, from obstetric injuries during delivery, because they're delivering in makeshift hospitals, they're delivering in the tents. And they're malnourished when they give birth. And so them and their babies have a higher rate of maternal mortality, of infant mortality. And then you have those who are dying of infectious diseases, of the thousands who have hepatitis at the moment, of the polio, and those who are dying not immediately from their injuries, but from the wounds that do not have access to healthcare to stop the infection setting in, and then eventually the infection becoming sepsis and killing them. The number is closer to 300,000. This is around 10 to 12% of Gaza's population. France, at the end of the Second World War, 4% of its population were killed. This is literally and mathematically a genocidal project. This is not a political term. This is a literal and mathematical term where you want to eliminate the population and to ensure that whoever is left is incapable of becoming part of a society because they're tending to their wounds or they've been so severely debilitated by the injuries and the neglected injuries.
Dr. Abusita, you have asked, how can a live